Oh, no.
What an amazing start.
Let's try this again. What's going on, everybody? I'm your host, Dez, from the Gain Stage Podcast. Today, we're joined by two people I consider friends, Madison and Caleb from Jack the Elbow. They are a prog rock band from Birmingham, Alabama. How's it going this afternoon, fellas?
Pretty good, man.
Well, man, thank you for having us on here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to get right into this because some people listening to this podcast are going to probably say, like, what the hell does Jack the Elbow even mean? So give us a little bit of backstory on the name.
And fantastic question. So me and Caleb and our original drummer, Tucker, are all three martial artists. And so we've been training for a long time. That's how we all met each other. That's how we ended up starting the band together. And so to jack an elbow is to attack or to break somebody's elbow. Not an official term, jack my elbow.
Sort of
that kind of vibe. There's surely at least somebody who looks at the name, probably a lot of people who look at the name and be like, why is there an elbow and why is his name Jack? What is going on with that?
Yeah, so that's actually funny you mentioned that. So, you know, back in my previous band, Malice Jackson, we played one of our first shows with you guys, and I saw the show flyer, and I'm like, who is Jack the Elbow? I'm like, that is such an odd name. But it's one of those odd names that stick out in a good way now, because it's got like a nice ring to it in a way that it's odd, but it still stands out. Kind of like Coheed and Cambria.
Hey, like there it is. How far do we make it?
Just getting that one out of the way immediately.
Take a shot every time one of us says Coheed.
Jack the Elbow was when we sat down to like start the name, we had 10 potential band names, and 9 of them were the worst band names imaginable.
They were just so generic.
They were not good. One of them was like Shades Mountain Project, because we were rehearsing over at our buddy's Chris's house at the time. He lived off in Bluff Park, and so that was one of them. We had like Soul and Luna was a contender for like half a second. We had a number of names on the board, and all of them were so terrible. Jack the Elbow was just the one.
Yeah, and I love the name. You know, it's coming up with a name, especially nowadays, is really hard because you guys know how many bands pop up in the Birmingham area like every single week. You know, there's like 5 new projects, you know, and coming up with a name that is unique and stands out matters. And I guarantee if you Google Jack the Elbow, you are going to be the only Jack the Elbow.
That is the thing, because it's not just Birmingham, it's the entire world. So
we didn't have to fight for that one. We didn't have to pay anyone for any URLs or usernames.
Now this is a deep piece of lore, and I'm so glad that this was vetoed because I really wanted the band name to be Scandorphian Jadanus.
Scandorphian Jadanus.
For half a second, I was like, no,
I forgot that was one of them.
It'll be good. It's like, no, it would not have been good. Nobody wouldn't have been able to pronounce it or spell it.
What is the origin of that?
Scandorphian Jadanus. So there was at one point in time, probably around the time Inception came out, I got really into like lucid dreaming and stuff. So I would try to like, you know, study different techniques for all that and like dream journal and pay attention to dreams. Well, I wasn't super successful. I was here and there. But one time I had this dream, and in the dream I was in a doctor's office, and the doctor comes in and he goes, I have terrible news. You have this disease and your life is going to be cut short. And I was like, well, what do I have? And he goes, you have Scandorphian Jadanus. And I immediately, it was so bizarre and just so BS that it just like made me lucid in the dream. And then I had a lucid dream after that. And then as soon as I woke up, I like wrote it down. It was like Scandorphian Jadanus. So that's the origin of Scandorphian Jadanus.
I was wondering where that came from, just from the Discord. I'm like, that is
Discord.
You know, it sounds almost like a Scandinavian Viking name in a way.
It does
a little bit. It would have been. It truly would have been. Even though I did have my heart set on it. But sometimes this has happened many times over the course of the band, is that I will have my heart set deeply on something that is a wrong decision, and my bandmates will have to tell me, it's like, let's just think on that for a little bit. So luckily that one got vetoed.
That's okay. And sometimes your bandmates have to keep you grounded like that, you know, to temper your expectations and make you realize, like, hey, let's not do that. You know,
yes.
Speaking of lucid dreaming, a lot of your guys' lyrics touch on concepts like that, specifically like philosophy and, you know, the self, you know, so to speak. Yeah. So walk us a little bit through that and your process for coming up with those lyrics.
Yes. So we definitely write about that sort of thing a lot. Me and Madison both write lyrics, and I tend to write just a lot from that headspace of like thinking about introspectively philosophical stuff, sometimes spirituality related stuff, or almost even new agey stuff. Like, I'll just, for me, whatever I'm like thinking about at the time, whether it be that I've read something about some Eastern thought system that I like, or some Native American thought system, or some Western, I consume any and all of that stuff all the time. So I will then wind up writing a song about it that's like heavily influenced by it. Like our song Phoenix from Crush is directly references lucid dreaming, and also like Carl Jung's ideas about like the shadow and things like that. And then our most recent EP project, the whole theme of it from start to finish, all four songs, deals with the self and spirituality and philosophy, things like that, which we both wrote those songs about 50-50.
We do be writing stuff about that.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a prog thing in a way, in a sense.
I think it is a little bit of a prog thing in a sense. I have sort of noticed over the years as me and Caleb have been writing with each other, I think that our songwriting styles sort of mirror each other a little bit. Whereas Caleb usually is hitting the more introspective. I think I'm a little more extrospective.
There's a song title
to the introspection. That's not a word, but we can all glean. We can all glean the understanding that I was intending with that.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah, and I actually had a conversation about Val whenever it released with you, Caleb, about the we had a decently long conversation about I can't remember the exact context of the conversation, but it was something along the lines of staring into the mirror long enough that things start to break down, or you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Gosh, I don't even remember having this conversation. But yes, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was forever ago. Val came out.
Yeah, that's a theme of Val, and that's a theme that also is in the song Smoke and Mirrors, is meditation with a mirror.
You might say.
And then there's like the effect. There's a name for the effect where like it's called the strange face in the mirror effect that science has talked about. But then there's also like some, I think there's some things that seem to go beyond science, at least in personal experience, that are echoed in both of those songs.
Okay. For sure. Yeah, and you just released the last single of that EP, Keep Going. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fantastic song, and I know that personally I was not expecting – well – whenever you guys sent me the demo, and that's a great thing about being friends with these guys, I get to hear all of the fun stuff before it releases. Yeah. And
we are our biggest fans.
Exactly. And
other musicians.
And that's the cool thing about it, is because when you have other musician friends, you get to hear things way before they ever release.
Yeah, that's
months or years even sometimes.
But that near the end of Keep Going, you've got that really heavy part with the screams and growls. Mm-hmm. Not expecting that at all. Yeah. It was a really unique part of the song. So was that something that y'all just wanted to like throw in there for like a little surprise, or you know, what led y'all to add that?
Yeah. So that particular song is very, very like steeped in like Native American like vision quests. And mm-hmm. so the whole idea of that, like the story underneath the theme, with the theme being of like submitting yourself to a higher power, whatever that higher power may be for you. The story underneath that theme is of a young boy or young man questing into the woods for a vision.
Okay.
Quest. So the little cleaner bridge before that part is dreamy and mystical and all of the foggy, cloudy, mystical, spiritual stuff. And then the heavy vocal part is intended to be like, okay, well, if there's good spirits in the world, there's also probably bad spirits too. There might be some stuff out there in that plane of existence that could scare the shit out of you. And so that part is intended to be frightening, as though you're having an encounter, with a demon on a vision quest.
Neat. I was curious about that. Who did the vocals on that part?
That's our producer, Douglas. John. Nice. John D. Douglas. The legend.
I wasn't sure if one of you guys had done that, because that was really neat.
I wish I could do it.
Are one of you going to learn to do that for live, or are you going to run tracks for that?
We've run tracks. We actually just ran that as a track for the first time the other night, because in the past we've just played it as a breakdown with no tracks. But now that the song's out, like, we need the screams there. So the other night we ran it as a track. It would be cool to learn to do it decently enough that one of us could also mouth along with it even. Mm-hmm. But that's a really hard riff at the same time. Like, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da is tough.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, tracks, sometimes people get their panties in a wad about tracks when they can't see it, but we're also a three-piece mm-hmm. that's used to running tracks, and it's good enough for Rush, so I feel like if that's the case, it can be good enough for us to a degree.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one thing in, you know, our song that we dropped a couple weeks ago, Liminal, I had one of my friends add screams to that, just because at the time, Haley wasn't able to do it, I wasn't able to do it, but I'm like, well, at some point, it would be nice to be able to do it. So I've been on this, you know, journey of learning to do it myself. And it is difficult, especially when you're playing, you know, harder riffs. Because it's, if you're not used to playing an instrument and singing at the same time, which you guys both do, kudos for that, because y'all's riffs are insane. I can only imagine, you know, the control it would take to do that level of vocals with
that is,
you know, on top of your already insane riffage.
Yeah. That's definitely a process that we've learned, because like I couldn't really do it at all when we started as a band. And then really when we got to Madison had to figure it out quicker. But for me, when we got to our song Phoenix and we got around to we have to play this live, it's got. The pre-chorus is really not an easy riff, and I have to sing at the same time. So when we started learning that song, I kind of figured out a system for learning, and the easiest is to put it into a DAW and slow it way down and try to find like almost like little hook points where like, oh, I know that this syllable latches on to this note mm-hmm. on the guitar. And it's like when you can find three or four of those, suddenly you can do it. But before that, it's like trying to use two brains at the same time.
Right, yeah.
Right. Same process for me. I'll go into the DAW and like actually program my bass line out in MIDI and my vocal melody out in MIDI and and then just run it super slow, and being able to physically see how the vocal melody and the bass lines up is a big help. I've had a couple people come up and be like, how do you do that? How do you play and sing that at the same time? And that is an amazing compliment, and I'm very gracious when I receive those compliments. And the answer is a year and a half of work.
Yeah. I don't think people realize the amount of practice that actually goes into playing
so
your guys' style of music. Like, it's obviously you guys are, there are a lot of rock elements, right? It's prog rock, but on the other side of that, there is the prog part of it. You know, it's not necessarily easy stuff to play. Like your bass lines, you're just all over the place, you know, and singing at the same time. It's incredible to watch.
It can be very difficult. And there is a lot of time that goes into it. Keep Going, for example, that was written. It's about a year old, and it's taken the full year to get to the point, be like, okay, there's still some parts of this that need to be more polished in the performance of that song live. But I've at least got it to a point now to where I can manage to get to the end of that song. Sometimes that means simplifying. Like if you can simplify a part and still maintain the essence of that part. Sometimes that's the answer, at least until you can get another 6 months of practice in to get the part that you really want to play down.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, speaking of your insane riffs, whenever you're sitting down to write a song, like, do you guys approach it from hey, I have this vocal melody, or, you know, maybe do you have a riff idea, or what's your approach to writing a new Jack the Elbow song?
Usually in the past, either I will write an entire bass line for a song, or Caleb will write an entire guitar line for the song. That's 9 times out of 10 where things start from, and then we build from there.
For me, with this particular band, we were talking about this earlier in the car, because we were coming back from a buddy's house. For this band, there's never been a moment where we started with lyrics, I don't think, as far as I know of. It always starts with the music, and then comes vocal melody after the music, usually, and then comes the lyrics. I think once or twice I've maybe had an idea that started as a vocal melody, but usually, for me, it starts with a guitar, or it starts with his bass lines, and then we kind of build from that. In the past, we have I've always written just with a recording into a DAW. Now we are using, and we did it a little bit on the new EP, and we're doing it almost entirely on the new album we're writing right now, but we're doing it all in Guitar Pro. So I have my guitar, and I'm writing, and I use Guitar Pro often to write things I can't actually play yet. So it's kind of pushing the envelope of what I'm able to do. It's right on that edge. And then we take the Guitar Pro, I pull it into Reaper, go in there and actually demo out the guitar, cheat a little bit in the editing, because again, it's something I'm going to have to practice a lot on a lot of it before we ever get around to really recording it. And then from there, writing vocals to it. So Guitar Pro rocks. Okay. If anyone's out there is not using it, and you think you would like to have like tablature and hear your music before you can play it, Guitar Pro is the bee's knees for sure.
Yeah. That's something that I brought up in the previous podcast. You guys came up in the previous podcast, but that's a question I'll get to in a minute. So I actually bought Guitar Pro because I'd heard you talking about that, where, you know, you could actually sit down and write stuff and, you know, try basically push your boundaries, you know, like you were saying, it's writing stuff you can't play yet, but that's the key word, yet, you know, write something you, So there's I don't want to say it's a lot, but there is a group of people that will say that is cheating, because you're not physically writing, you know, the song. Yeah, but right. I highly disagree, because it's not just like you're punching in a number, you know, you have to go in there and make sure things sound right. Like, what would you say to those people that consider it cheating to use a tool like that?
Yeah. I'd probably say fuck off, but then what I'd say in a more diplomatic way is okay. So what I'd say in a more diplomatic way is like all of production and recording is cheating, but that's how I approach production. I don't approach it to like try to capture a quote live or raw sound. So I have no problem with cheating at any level on that end. On the flip side of that, like you said, can't play yet. If you come watch us in a live show, you will see that by the time we play those songs, when they're out and we're playing them live, we can play them. So I see it as a tool to push my own limits and actually get better at guitar. Like writing our music like that makes me a better guitarist. So, I don't see it as cheating. If it's cheating in the same way that all production is, in my opinion. But we also approach production like we are trying to make it sound, I don't want to say good, because it's not necessarily that other styles are bad. That sounds produced or polished. That's the word I'm looking for. So we do a very polished, everything is on the grid style, very engineered productions. So I don't really have an issue with, quote, cheating. And again, the open invitation is always like, just come see it live. You'll see that we learn it by then. But yeah, for the year beforehand, before you ever hear the song released, yes, there's a year, 18 months, where I can't play it, where it's written, and I can't actually play it well live yet. So if I'm a cheater for that amount of time, you're not going to know anyway, because you're not in the band. So, I mean, maybe our friends like you will know, but yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's just a work in progress, you know.
Right.
I would say,
it's almost like you're learning somebody else's song, but you wrote it. You know, I don't see it in any different than like me. I consider myself an excellent rhythm player, right? But you know, if I'm wanting to push my rhythm playing further, like I might go and learn a new Spirit Box song, and you know, that takes a lot of time to learn that, you know, and I can because of stuff like Guitar Pro, and that's pushing my level up because I'm learning something new. But writing your own stuff in Guitar Pro is you're just, you know, writing stuff you can't perform yet. So it's one of those tools, and you'd said the word tool earlier. That's a really good way to put it. Like, it is a tool that enables you to get better at what you're already doing. You know, I've actually done this in the past, and I haven't done it in a while because I've had a decent creative streak, but I have a Logic Pro template set up where I have my normal drums, which, you know, it's a MIDI drum track because tracking drums is expensive and time consuming. I help my drummer cheat because he does not sit down and record his own parts. I program everything for him and I write his parts. So
the tea is being spilled.
You're really outing the honest.
Yeah.
Honorless.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, it's in the name Honorless. but I have a template where I've got the drums, a MIDI bass and a MIDI guitar. And I'll go in there and just mess around with stuff. Yeah. And it's almost the same way as Guitar Pro, it's a little worse because now it's all the notes are on a piano roll instead of having the tabs right there in front of me.
Yes. For me, the it's same like, idea. For me, it's a tool to write music at my brain's ability of writing music, as opposed to my hand's ability to writing music.
Yeah.
A tool to help me write music that is greater than I am in this current moment.
Sure.
And then at that point in time, laying the onus on yourself and be like, okay, well now you gotta now you got to man up and figure out how to do it.
Yeah, I
do definitely think that. Yeah, I do definitely think that it's been a really great tool for getting better, over time.
For sure.
Me, for the years before I was in Jack the Elbow, I was playing other people's music and learning how to do what they're doing at a point in time when I couldn't really do it, and so I mean, for me, it's the same thing.
Right. What's the difference? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. So well,
what's the
you know,
the difference is you're creating something. I mean, that's really
the difference is that you're creating the thing that you have to learn how to do now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's kind of a twofold thing, because you're having to be creative in a different way than having the physical instrument in your hand, you know, necessarily. Mm-hmm. Obviously you can't have it in your hand while you're doing it, but you know, like, you know, if you're on the go or something, like, hey, I've got a quick idea, pull out your laptop and then boom, there you go.
Yeah. Work yeah.
On,
or
on the idea.
Or like your muscle memory will sometimes default to certain patterns on your instrument. It's a really great way to write music, like outside of what your muscle memory really wants to do. Like, or a lot of times, I mean, I'm not a keyboardist, but sometimes if I'm writing something, it can be fun to write something on the keyboard, because that completely changes where the notes are under your fingers, and you can get it's a fun challenge to do things that way sometimes.
Now, a hypothetical question: if you guys had an unlimited budget for recording an album, unlimited budget given a, we'll say, 4-month time frame, how would that change your creative process? Do you think it would be more hands-on, everybody in a room, or would you continue on with your typical creative process?
It's a good question. Our latest song, Threshold, is one that me and Madison wrote kind of together in the same room as far as the music went, and that went pretty well. Besides that song, and off our first album, Teenage Pragma, was kind of written together as a whole band. Besides those two, we don't usually write in the same room a lot. And I don't know if we had an unlimited budget as far as the writing end of it. I mean, maybe it would be something new to try. I don't know that I would love it immediately. It would be a challenge, because to me, there is a, my own, like, I guess, philosophy about doing really any kind of art is that it's very vulnerable to put out. And so when you're in like the space of, hey, what about this? Say, what about this? Yeah. I don't want eyes on that until it's totally like I've gone back and said, okay, no to this and yes to this, and then say, okay, for sure, Here's the full package of my idea. Now, if you want to add or change something, you can do it. But besides, if you try to do something in the, like, I think if you're in the moment feeling creative and you have like a clash with someone, it can really kill that whole vibe to me.
Absolutely. There would certainly be more opportunity for what could potentially be a very good idea to be shot down by somebody in the room.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Sometimes, sometimes like our ideas are, especially in being in a prog band, sometimes they're not, they don't immediately sound like what you expect. And so that becomes, if sometimes when we think of that as what's good, I don't think I could get away with it. Like there's a song, Smoke and Mirrors, off our new EP that has this like ambient jazzy tapping section in it. I don't know that I could have gotten the whole band on board with that if I was just like in the moment, like, hey, what if we do this? Because it's wild and stupid and crazy. But once it's in the full idea, I think it gives it a little more weight to be like, okay, maybe.
Yeah. The context is important.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I would say that anybody in the world who wants to give us an unlimited budget for this album, please do. We're open for that, and we will happily run that experiment.
But speaking of your songs, like from, you know, your first album and even your new EP, what is a song that you feel gets overlooked by fans? Like, what's one that you wish fans would enjoy more?
I wish we would enjoy more.
For the album, I think, but I don't know that it gets overlooked because a lot of people like it. Going Under is a very special song to me off of the album, like lyrically and songwritingly. So I really like that, but I don't know that it's necessarily overlooked. Maybe an overlooked one that's, I still think, good songwriting, even though it's very Coheed and we get tired of the Coheed comparison, would be Teenage Progmo. Because it's, I think it's got good songwriting. Sometimes when we play it, I'm like, hey, actually, this is kind of a good song.
Teenage Progmo was what I was about to say. I think as far as our Spotify streaming goes, that Teenage Progmo has consistently been dead last.
Yeah.
For the entire time that Crush has been out. Which I don't know. Maybe it's actually bad. Who knows?
I don't know.
It's not bad.
Progressive. I love the audience. Right.
It doesn't. Progmo does not mean progressive Mormonism. So I just want to throw that out there.
We've had like on two or three
separate occasions, people have come and asked us about the Mormon song, and we're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Finally, we realized that Progmo, P-R-O-G-M-O, is apparently a shorthand for progressive Mormonism. When we wrote that song as a joke, I titled it, because, you know, working titles are always kind of like just goofy. I titled it Teenage Progmo because the teenage part is that we knew we were going to write like a adolescent romance in the lyrics. So that was the teenage part. And the Progmo part was supposed to be progressive emo, which was me saying I wrote a Coheed song, basically. And then we just never changed it from the working title. So it has nothing to do with Mormons. No offense to any Mormons, but I dropped the F-bomb early in, so they're not here anyway.
That's true.
So on your guys' live sets, have you had any train wreck live moments that in the moment was awful, but looking back you're like, that it's, you know, it's something that you can laugh at now?
Well, yeah, we can definitely laugh at it now, but they certainly were train wrecks in the moment. So we play to a click. And we have backing tracks, and the way that we have all that set up is, the house gets our backing tracks. We have the inners, we have the clicks in our inners. All of our entire live sets are programmed down to the exact second. And the click is the Lord, whose word must be followed to the utmost thing. So
praise be.
Really, really, really. Some of the biggest train wrecks that we have had in the past are when you get one beat off of that click.
Because
if you get one beat off of that click, all of your backing tracks are now one beat off. And this beautiful picture that you were trying to paint for the audience falls into tragically chaos to the floor. Mm-hmm. Everybody that sits in their seat and like, wow, these guys are terrible. What are they doing?
Fortunately,
we'll talk about them now.
Yeah. In the moment, they say. Fortunately, I think most of the times that's happened, it probably has happened. We've played 40 shows, I think. We've played a lot of shows. It's probably happened like three times, and mostly earlier on. I think most of the times when it happened, I managed to like get down to the board and disengage the tracks and the click altogether within like a few bars, just so that they're not stuck with it. But that's always like a definite, that's a big oof moment whenever that has happened.
That's a terrible moment. That's really, unless you can find a part of the song to where you can jump ahead a beat and get back on the beat, you've kind of just, you've kind of shit the bed a little bit.
Yeah.
It's hard to recover from that one.
Yeah, and your guys' in-ear setup is, unless it's changed from the last time we played with you guys, you guys do it in a unique way. Like, you know, most bands do it through a computer like we do. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we run Logic Pro split out to our in-ear rig, and you guys have a really unique setup when it comes to the in-ears. So how do you explain your rig, essentially?
Yeah, we have a super cheap rig. The original idea was, let's get something cheap, and then it'll be a bonus idea from it is we won't deal with computers yet, and we want to deal with like that kind of troubleshoot with rack rigs. Although I want us eventually to go there. We probably should kind of already be doing that, but one of these days we're going to go there. But so we run a board. It's a little 4-channel, well, I guess 8-channel. You know, it's got like, they always have the extra like, ooh, stereo channels that they count. So I think it's actually technically an 8-channel board, and that we got off Facebook Marketplace. And we have a little receiver transmitter for our in-ear packs, also Velcroed, strapped down to the same board. And then we have a XLR-Y, which is a, you know, an XLR split. It's basically like a tip ring split, except for the XLR version of that. So it'll take a stereo track and throw the left one way and the right another way. And that's going into a, what's the word? I can't say what we call it. Into an adapter. An adapter. Yeah. It's not that bad, but yeah. So that goes into an adapter that plugs into a iPhone. And so for the clicks, I take a track on Reaper or whatever DAW. We use Reaper now. And I put a click on the hard right. And then I put all our tracks, some to mono on the left. So you have to kind of mix them in mono and be aware of that, because it's not stereo tracks. And so it goes hard panned, hard left. So once that's all done, I bounce it all out as an MP3, and then just put that on my iPhone. And then we go play the show. I plug in the adapter into the iPhone, and now it's taking that stereo track and splitting them. And so now one XLR cable is just a click, and the other is just the tracks. So then I go into our board, really with both, and there's another split where we send the tracks to the house, but we don't send the click line to the house. Then, for all the mics, the bass and the guitar, we split even further. So we have some cables already hooked into the board, ready to go, rolled up and stored nice and neat. But when we get on the stage, the first thing I do while the drums are being set up is I run those splitters into the microphones. And then the sound guy comes and says, "What is this?" And I go, it's the way we do
it.
Don't
worry about it.
Don't worry about it. It doesn't affect anything for the house at all. And then 50% of the time they go, "Okay, cool. I see what you did." And the other 50% of the time they go, "Okay, but like, where are you sending me your audio?" And I go, "Literally, you're getting the same audio that you've always gotten. There's just a split now. Nothing is changing. You're getting the same mic line you've always had. Don't do anything." Because it really confuses them sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes they're just like, they've not seen anything like that. So that's pretty much how we do it. If you need a cheap way to run ears and have tracks, you can do it. You do sacrifice stereo tracks, and stereo tracks are cool, but I would say that people notice less than they would like to think they would notice out in the, I mean, most all live audio is all mono anyway. Every other element is the guitars, the bass, the drums, everything you're hearing at a show is mono. So eventually it'd be cool to have some stereo tracks just to get like a weird phaser or whatever across the left, right spectrum for whoever's sitting in the middle. But, you know, that's how we do it.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes there are disasters, you know, with the in-ear rigs. Like you guys saw us experience, you know, in our previous band.
Y'all had one at True Story. We also had one at True Story.
We had a disaster there as well.
Yeah, hearkening back to disasters at shows. One of the worst disasters we had is as we were setting up our rig one night to play, we realized that the antenna for our receiver broke off.
Oh no!
As we were bringing it from our house to the venue, so we made it work. We like put it back in there and like taped it together to where it would hold, and it kind of just barely worked. We were getting a signal, but then every time the drums would like hit something on the floor time, the signal would cut out. You'd lose click for like three full bars, and then it would just come back in. Really,
miraculously, we didn't get off. Somehow, we did not get off the click that night.
We didn't get off the click that night.
That's just a sign of seasoned musicians.
It probably would have been a smart idea to just go without the click that night. That really would have been the solution in retrospect, is to just go all in without a click that night. Maybe we were just being hard headed that night, but that was very anxiety.
And that's the real pain of these type of rigs is, you know, bands of our level, we don't have, you know, techs or anything. No. We are the techs. Yeah. So
you are the tech.
You know, so something goes wrong, you better know how to fix it. Like I can't even remember what our issue was at that time, but you know, our most recent show, it was an on the fly thing where their board had two XLR inputs and we were trying to drop out a snake that had our fully mic'd kit, our guitar, bass tracks, our mics and everything. He's like, no, this ain't going to work. So I had to create a mix bus on our mixer and then I had to check that with my ears, and then we ran it to front of house, and then we adjusted some small stuff, but like being able to think on the fly like that is a huge thing, you know, with and being in a small band like ours, because, you know, trying to be as professional as possible because you're rolling up with these nice kits and guitars and rigs and everything. And then if you don't know how to fix it, you're, you know, you make yourself look like a dummy. But we've all done that. We've all made ourselves look dumb. It happens.
It does.
That is the worst feeling.
I think that if you're
an antenna.
Yeah, I think if you're going to start a band and you're going to start playing live, you really need to accept that you are going to eat shit so hard at some point in time, and probably more than once.
Probably a lot. You need to
come to terms with that real quick.
Yeah, it happens. And even the biggest bands still have mess ups now. It happens. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of if you're going to let that affect your whole night or if you're just going to keep rolling with it. And, you know, happens, you know, there's no sense in getting upset because it's just a show. You know, it's not like it was back in like the 80s where some, you know, studio bigwig is sitting outside being like, hey, this band ate shit. We're never signing them. You know,
it's not like that anymore. That's not the case. And it's very easy in those moments to get done with a set like that where you've messed up a part and be like, oh, you stupid idiot. Why would you do that? At the same point in time, just like you're saying, I have gone to see big bands. Tool comes to mind at the BJC last year. That I can't remember what song they were playing, but Adam just screwed up super hard, and that's actually like a great moment. I was like, I was at the show where Adam just ate shit in front of 100,000 people at the BJCC or however many the BJCC holds. But it's going to happen. Just get over it. Just like you say, don't let it ruin your whole night. Don't let it ruin your whole set.
Right.
You really gotta. You got to keep going. I hate to plug our own stuff, but you got to keep going.
Same. I've seen Cody. This will be shocking. I've seen Cody and Cambria about 15 times, and one time I saw them. This is actually at Avondale, so Madison was there too. They were doing a whole album. They were doing their fourth album all the way through, And in like the first song, there's like a little acoustic part, and Claudio just forgot the words, and he didn't say them, and then he said, he just brushed it off. He went, "You guys know it." He just kept going. You know, that was like, that's how they started out the set, was with a mess up, and they're like, you know,
was with a
infamous
mess up
for being incredibly tight. So, you know, it just happens.
I had the exact same experience at work play a few weeks ago. We started off our set with Val, and the absolute very first note that I played, I slide up to a note, and I just slid all the way past it. Like three frets past it.
It's just freeform jazz, baby. Commit to it.
It's just freeform jazz. I will say it's a lot easier to recover from a screw up in the middle of a set when you fuck up the first note that you play.
Yeah,
yeah.
That one hurts a little bit more, but it happens.
Yeah, and you know that's real great advice for new bands. You know, because like we said earlier, there are bands popping up all the time, like every day.
Definitely.
What is the worst piece of advice that you as a band have ever gotten?
I had to think about that one for a second.
What bad advice have we gotten?
One piece of advice that I got that I definitely disagree with. We were at the Nick. We are known to have played the Nick. If anybody is local to Birmingham, we went on a spree where we played the Nick 13 times in like a year, in like 13 months. It was a lot. So we have definitely played the Nick. That being said, there was one time we were playing there and there was a guy who was rather intoxicated, and he told me after our set.
Which time?
yeah, that's a good question. He told me after our set that that I needed to play more guitar solos, that I'm too good of a guitarist to not play. And like, we had like two solos across the, you know, 40 minute set.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that was just fully wrong.
Yeah, no.
Mm-hmm. So there's that one.
Yeah. It's,
I haven't gotten anything. I haven't gotten anything as far as like playing live or anything. I have gotten what I consider to be bad advice on production before. And the reason that I consider it to be bad advice is because it came from somebody that I don't like. And so every opinion that they have is wrong. But it was also like some really pretentious advice. So he had listened to our music, and I was on a phone call with him. Matter of fact, I was riding to the dojo with Caleb, and I wish we were recording this conversation.
I was listening to this conversation.
You were well, listening into this, like, conversation. And he's like, "Yeah, I listen to y'all's music, and I don't know, it just sounds really small. I think what you need is you need a second pair of studio monitors and to build another control room in your house so that you can like A/B y'all everything. That's how you get that big Nashville sound." it's like, bud, like I've already like built the room that I'm in right now, in my basement, like, so I would consider that to be bad advice in the sense that like the spirit of that advice is that you need something else. I do think that at some point in time you have to kind of work with what you have.
Sure.
One just came to my mind. Okay, we worked with someone on something. Not our EP, not our lovely friend John, who we love. None of the Atlanta people. Mm-hmm. But we worked with someone on a thing that we did, and they told us afterwards, "Have you guys ever thought about putting out instrumental versions of this just in case people hate the vocals?" Was the exact words that person told us. Have you thought about putting out instrumentals just in case people hate the vocals? Not, you know, like just in case people prefer, but after this person listened to us perform the thing, they said, just in case people hate
just on the
vocals.
Just on the off chance that, like,
and I was
like, everybody hates your dog shit, terrible vocals, you know, just in case.
That was a fun one.
That's rough.
That was a true, moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a fun situation. Or fun, I don't know if that's advice. I guess it kind of counts, but yeah, that we would be better as an instrumental band, basically.
You know, and what that's funny. Like, I do like instrumental stuff, and I feel bad because Periphery has gotten that. Like, I wish they would release all their stuff instrumental because I hate Spencer's voice. Like, that's stupid. Like, I really enjoyed Spencer's voice, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. But going back to what Madison was saying is, like, learning to work with what you have, you know, I think doing that can make you a better musician or producer is, like, my studio monitors, I have the Presonus Aeris 3.5, so they're incredibly small monitors. I don't have a sub or anything like that. I get a general mix. Check in my car, you know, check what I need to do. And to me, and, you know, I also send it to y'all for y'all's advice too. Like, a lot of, I think my stuff sounds decent for what I have, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Now it's not no Los Angeles studio level, but for being an independent, you know, producer and band, it works. And I think so many people get caught in that, oh, I need this and this. And if I just buy, you know, this new SSL compressor for my rack, it's going to make me a much better producer, you know, like.
Right. Meanwhile, in reality, they don't know what a compressor does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just that makes you the same level of producer with an SSL compressor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You really have to just learn to use the tools that yeah. if you don't have like a foundational knowledge of what you're doing, then that's not going to help you. Yeah. Also, you know, unless you have endless money, this is already a very expensive hobby. So
right. Even with the cheap stuff, it's expensive.
Even with the cheap stuff, it's very expensive. So there's also, like, a great deal of financial incentive to figure out how to do it with what you have.
For sure.
Yeah. Not only is it expensive monetarily, but it's expensive time-wise too, because
it is incredibly expensive.
It takes so much time to learn and grow. Like,
yeah.
Good Lord.
I just made a joke to Caleb about that this afternoon on the way back up here.
Yeah.
I was like, every time that we start recording a new project, we lose 3 weeks and $500.
Yeah.
That's like if we record someone else. But not even Jack the other. Someone's like, hey, will you help me with this? Yeah, that's
$500. Oh, yeah. We'd love to help you that. $500.
$500 later. After we buy some new plugin.
You know, this is a general piece of advice going out to whoever listens to this podcast that wants to get into producing and mixing and stuff. You can make like incredibly high quality recordings using stock plugins. Most of what I use on our stuff is stock plugins, other than, you know, maybe like a Fresh Air or Heat Wave, you know, using stuff like that. But even drum libraries, amp sims, you can get incredibly high quality ones for free. So you can
got some really good stuff.
Yes. I love Labs.
All those kind of MIDI key packs.
Yes.
A lot better. A lot of the MIDI stuff on Crush was Ableton stock sounds, which they worked out in the end, but really all of those Ableton packs are I think a little more geared towards electronic music. But we've been using the Lab stuff on the last couple of stuff that we produced and absolutely free and sounds fantastic.
Yeah. And another thing with that too is combining the plugins, like, you know, taking, you know, a Labs piano sample pack, right, and then throwing some extra reverb and delay and, you know, maybe a little bit of gain on it just to give it a little bit of extra heat, you know. It's getting creative that makes you better, you know, and learn, yeah, obviously learning what things do. That's a big thing. And, I'm not naming names, but there are quite a few producers and studios, particularly in our area, that think compression is everything, and they will overcompress and oversaturate.
It's a lot.
Everything.
It's not everything.
No, it's awful. And, you know, that's a telltale sign of somebody that just doesn't take time to learn what things do. Now, sometimes it's cool to overcompress and squash something if you're doing it in a context that makes sense. But when it's everything, you know?
Yeah.
But
compressors are like the tail of... Is someone very new to producing or to doing that kind of music, can you tell if they understand what a compressor does or not? And often when they're new to it, like they don't know. A lot of times
it makes it sound good.
If we compress it. Yeah. Well, the compressor, I can't really hear it. It just makes it sound good. Or it makes it louder. That's a fun one. It's like, okay, that's what a compressor does. It makes it louder. Okay.
Well, that really is the, And I totally agree that I think that compression is really the most difficult thing to begin to understand, because it's like the most difficult thing to learn how to hear. How training your ear to be able to hear what the compressor is doing.
Because everything else is really self-explanatory, like reverb and delay. You could twist knobs in a plug-in and know exactly what it does. EQ, you can make a slight adjustment and hear it, but a compressor, you know, you adjust the release on it and have somebody sit there and tell you what that does. It's, you know, totally different.
It releases it.
Yeah, it just releases it. It releases it. As soon as it releases
the attack.
Yeah.
Attack, crab core mention.
It's easy.
It's easy.
Hashtag music producer.
Yeah.
So
come record in my studio.
That's it, dude. All you need is a compressor. That's it. Nothing else.
That's all you need.
My Line 6 Spider has all the effects I could ever need. We'll just run everything through that, record it, and compress it.
Yeah,
is that cool? I got like a 60 cycle hum on my guitar, but you can take that out in post, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But going back to live set stuff, what do you look for in a good live set from another band?
I think energy is important to me.
Energy?
I like to see people moving on stage. I try to do energy that really on stage. Good. I need to get better at it personally, but it's sometimes hard with the sort of riffs that we play. I like to see that. And then tightness, I really am a fan of, because I want us to be as tight as we can be. And so when I see a band and they're super tight, that makes me go, heck yeah. So I like that
too. Yeah. Yeah. Good songs. If I'm listening to your set, I can forgive the sound being less than some venues just sound better than other venues. Mm-hmm. But the song should be good. It should be something that's worth listening to. I guess is the best way to say it.
Very true.
I also, with other bands that I see and other bands that we play with, I want you to be like an enjoyable person to be around. I don't really want to play with you if you're a jerk.
Yeah.
that's
fair.
Even if your music is incredible, if you're not somebody that I want to interact with.
Right.
Yeah.
Then I don't want to interact with you.
I think we both of our groups have played with quite a few bands that fit the bill of being jerks and not wanting to play with them, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's something the Birmingham scene is real bad about, and you know this. Like it is a hardcore scene. you know, literally hardcore. Like if you're not a hard, you know, if you're not in a hardcore band or part of that crowd, it is really difficult to quote unquote make it in that scene. You know,
it is. Sure. Yeah,
for sure.
It is. And I get it to a degree. Cause like, yeah, I don't know. I get it. There's times when I have wanted to be more open to doing like mixed bills, quote unquote mixed bills, with people. But then like mixed bill in that community, not, and I'm not saying the whole thing. I'm not saying if anyone sees it from the hardcore community, like I love a lot of those guys. There's some really cool people in it, but even the word mixed bill in that scene, it means, yeah, we have to let some dumb band that has clean vocals play and we'll all stand with our arms crossed and not move. even in like the heavy breakdown and like keep going, yeah, we're just not going to do anything. Like you could punch someone to that if you wanted to, doesn't matter.
Yeah. That I don't know how you guys feel about it, but to me it's Birmingham having that level of what's the word I'm looking for? It's almost a, y'all are probably going to come up with the word before I do, but it is a closed group.
There, yeah,
for sure.
What's the word? That.
Click.
Yeah, maybe click is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. There's been many times where, and not just us, other people in Birmingham, other bands in Birmingham that we've had this discussion with. There's been many times where we have felt like that, even though we very clearly are in the music scene, that we're not
that
in
we're
the music
not
scene
in it
at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
That we're not in the music scene and that we're not really wanted in the music scene sometimes.
That's for sure a thing.
Unfortunately.
Right. Because the local scene is dominated by that hardcore kind of beatdown.
Yeah.
Even like metalcore bands don't do as good.
Yeah.
You know? Even metalcore doesn't do super great. It's there's just a real fondness of like beatdown and hardcore and it's not that I dislike that kind of music. I don't really listen to hardcore. I do listen to metalcore, but not a lot of hardcore. But it's there, like he just said, we've had discussions about this with so many friends in bands that do even, like I said, metal, and if they have clean vocals, it's just no acceptance for them, and they feel the same way. Like what he said and what I'm saying right now has been expressed by, gosh, probably five or six bands we've talked to over the last couple of years, of like we all just kind of feel like outsiders in the scene, in the place that we're from.
And that's a real shame, because like, you know, I'm not necessarily from Birmingham, but we were incredibly active in Birmingham. That's where most of our shows took place, and like being part of that community, it feels like you're not in that community. And there is a very clear divide of, it's, you've got the hardcore and beatdown guys, and then there's everybody else. There's no hardcore and beatdown, and then you've got the southern rock guys, and then you've got the progressive rock guys. It's all hardcore beatdown and everybody else. And it's a shame, because there are such incredible musicians out there, and like the community as a whole won't give them a chance because it's dominated by a very industry dominated genre right now. I mean, look at guys like Knocked Loose and Kubla Khan and, you know, bands like that. Definitely. It's huge right now, but just because it's so big doesn't mean that bands like you guys and, you know, Speakeasy and, you know, other bands like that shouldn't be, you know, in the group, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a shame.
It is. And I mean, I hate to say it, but every show that we play out of Birmingham is our best show.
Yes. Every single one. Anytime we leave Birmingham, it's just like, oh my gosh, this is such a different vibe.
Like,
people are into the music.
People care.
Yeah,
when people enjoy what we're doing, and
or when we play in Birmingham. The flip side is the same thing. When we play in Birmingham, a lot of times if someone comes up and is like, "Holy cow, you guys rock," it's like someone traveling from out of state with one of the one of the other bands or something. It's an outsider. It's not the people inside. And I don't know. It's a problem that I don't even know if the people who are quote in power in those situations, I don't know if they can even really do anything about it. It's like a collective. It's like a collective.
Or if they're even aware of it.
Or if they're even aware about it.
The word I was looking for earlier was exclusive. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, it's a very exclusive, very, very community. Exclusive.
Yeah.
Very exclusive. So, you know, we're kind of in the same boat where any show that we played outside of Birmingham was phenomenal. Like the Huntsville crowds every time are amazing. Like we played Honorless played our first show at Fat Jam last weekend or the weekend before. I can't remember, but there was like 250 people there, and there was, it was a lot of people. It was a legitimate mixed bill. So we were first, and we're like, you know, alternative metal, whatever. And then you had a metal group from Iuka, Mississippi. And then there was an Irish folk band playing in the middle of the set. There was a DJ at the end of the night. There was like country bands, rock bands. It was a legitimate mixed bill. And you would never get something like that in Birmingham and have that many people show up. It was an incredible experience. And I mean, I don't know that you guys would necessarily fit in. You're Birmingham scum. I don't know if that's like, it's really meant for newer bands. But I still should say you guys, I think you guys would have a ton of fun doing it.
What is it?
It's called Fat Jam. Here, I'll send you the link real quick.
Fat Jam.
So the next one, I think y'all have a show.
We got a show
not a show. Y'all are going to somebody's show that night on the 14th.
We do that.
We were joking
when we said we were going to some show. We're playing with Speakeasy.
Okay.
So they
do it every month though.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Like a July thing.
That'd be good. We'll lie and tell them we're brand new. We just started.
There are usually, I think there was 12 bands and 8 comedians last time. So it's like, it's every band gets like a 15-minute set, so that's like 2.5 Jack the Elbow songs.
Literally.
Pick the shorter ones for that set.
In between the band's changeover, the comedians do their set. So it's like, it's a really well-oiled machine, but it's also an incredibly DIY thing. Like the stage is made out of pallets and like 2x4s. So you know, they get pallets out there, drill the 2x4s in. It's really cool to have experienced that as our first show. And, you know, they invited us back next time, but it's not going to be one of those things that like, hey, we're going to go play this every single month because we're going to outgrow that type of, you know, crowd. And, you know, I brought it up earlier where the soundboard, it only had two inputs.
That's wild. You know?
Oh yeah, so, what was the deal with that? Like that is shocking to hear.
So with it being a DIY show, like it's a volunteer for certain aspects of it. So the sound guy was volunteering. I think he had his own soundboard. It was small, but I don't think, you know, I don't want to say Honorless is like a professional level on equipment, but I don't think he was expecting somebody to roll up with an in-ear rig, dropping out like 10 lines to his board, you know?
Sure.
So that's a little bit different on that side of it, where everybody else was fine. You know, they plugged in their mic and, you know, turned their amps up and we're good to go. But, you know, we are on that one end of the spectrum, that off case that they should be able to be prepared for next time.
Yeah. Right. You know, sure. Sure. 100%.
Because if you guys pulled up, you know, y'all are going to pull up with y'all's rig and be like, hey, you know, a similar situation.
For sure. A little bit of hot water.
Yeah, I want to throw something out because I think like talking about the whole hardcore thing that's in Birmingham, two things about it. Number one, we have a friend who has been super supportive of Jack the Elbow, seen us a couple times, who was one of the vocalists in one of the bands in Birmingham. Like, they played Furnace Fest, sweetest guy in the world. He himself corroborates all of this too. So like, it's not like, it's not like it's the perception of insecure people who are outside, you know, it's a thing that he saw himself and, you know, people see it. So that's a real thing. And the second thing that I want to say is, when I talk about that and you're talking about the exclusivity of it, I'm not downing all of heavy music in general or even any of the music, but there's good heavy music in Birmingham. That's not even in that clique. So for example, we're going to play, on the 14th at, it's not really going to be necessarily a metal night that night, but it's often a metal night booked by Jeremy, who's Spirit Guardian Music. So shout out to him if you like kind of proggy metal, instrumental music. He does that. Very, very cool guy. But he does what's called Metal Night at True Story in Birmingham. And those are always a lot of fun. It's metal bands, it's heavy music, and those guys are always super supportive of us. And they probably have the same exact experience, would be my guess, in and around Birmingham. And then outside of Birmingham, like we were invited to play last in the fall at in Columbus, Georgia, out around Auburn, I guess, by Avian Theory. Those are cool guys as well, friends. They're playing super heavy stuff as well. And they had like a mixed thing that day. And I just say all that to say, like, it's not like it's just a hardcore thing. It seems to be there's a specific thing going on in Birmingham that goes beyond the music and seems to just Birmingham kind of be an exclusive thing. Yeah, there's some exclusivity there for sure.
There seems to be like a group of people that whole thing revolves around, you know, like it's really odd because it's not like they're trying to do it on purpose. You know what I mean? But it's like there's a specific group that it revolves around, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't really think that anybody's doing it on purpose.
No.
Right.
I don't think that anybody's doing it on purpose or doing it maliciously.
They're just doing it,
but they are still doing it. Like there's people in and around that scene who are aware of this and the answer that
we're aware of you
is that we're aware of you. We're just looking for the right bill to put you on. Yeah. It's like, okay, well that
the right bill
that comes off a little bit as a business professional go away.
Sure.
Okay, well then we'll go away.
And that too, we had an incredibly hard time even getting on for, after a while we were able to book our own shows and stuff, but breaking into that scene down there already is hard. It's a matter of knowing people and being like, hey, you know, we're trying to get a show, nobody will give us a break. And, you know, shout out Danny Hammonds. He was incredible.
Danny Rock.
Like, generous to be able to get us on shows. Like, a True Story.
Definitely.
That is my favorite place to play in Birmingham. Because the crowds are always so nice and welcoming. True Story is like that one haven that is safe for everybody. We played a couple mixed bills there, and it was always fun at True Story.
I agree.
Handy Dammons.
I got a new... Handy. I got a Handy Dammons from Danny Hammonds.
That'll make sense if you've ever seen it at Danny Hammonds sticker.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I really enjoy True Story. And it does it does feel like a little bit of a safe haven, in Birmingham for a progressive rock band like Jackie Alba.
Yeah, and to some degree, if we were in like a very open, with arms wide open sort of scene, we would
shout out Green.
We would still be a prog rock band. You know, like we're always gonna be.
We're always gonna be
not playing music that's like, I don't want to call it pretentious music, but it kind of is like music that's not necessarily super
accessible,
immediately
music.
Accessible. Yeah, you know, that's not us. So
like it's very easily accessible to people who like progressive music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, musicians and I like it.
Musicians like it a lot, and I do think that to some degree we do a pretty decent job of bridging the gap towards to people who aren't necessarily inclined towards progressive music, but that is that even still that is a factor that definitely does play into the equation.
So you actually just brought up what was brought up in my interview with Cam from Veo. He had brought up that they tread that line for so long of being a band that was trying to be progressive, but at the same time trying to maintain a listenability for the average person, you know, like turning on music and be like, oh, yeah, I can get down with this, even though it's on the progressive side of things. And I brought up you guys immediately. Like,
thank you.
I think the average person can turn on a Jack the Elbow song and listen to it and enjoy it for all of its elements, even though it's on that progressive side. Mm-hmm. And do you guys ever see yourselves going off once? You may have answered this question, going off one side or the other of that, of getting more into the progressive side that's just for the music nerds, or going more of a mainstream, like, watered down progressive sound, because you guys are full on progressive, you know.
I think for this EP, I definitely think that we've gone more fully in the progressive side of things.
And the album we're writing is not going to help.
The album that we're writing is really not going to help. It's really just tripling down.
It's really just tripling down.
I think as far as like the music is concerned, that we're pretty hardcore into just really tripling down on the progressive side of things musically. At the same point in time, we always really try to put a great deal of importance on the songwriting, which I think is where that vibe that you're coming from about us is coming from. I think if you can write a really good song, then that gives you permission to do whatever you want around it. Writing a really great song unlocks the doors to be as wildly progressive as your little prog heart can muster.
That's
really the key.
Yeah, sorry. We've always tried to place an emphasis on songwriting and trying to answer the question of like, what's the story of the music? And I'm not saying that as like a conceptual super proggy thing, but like, what's the narration from here to there? And, you know, like, what are we doing? What am I doing in verse two that's going to do some kind of mix up here? Like, what element keeps people interested? And, you know, where's the repetition? That's something that we use a lot for a prog rock band. We make heavy use of repetition. We don't do a lot of through compositions. And the reason for that is that's good songwriting, you know? We don't really sacrifice a lot of the mechanisms of good songwriting don't get sacrificed in the name of prog really for us. It's kind of the opposite.
Yeah. That would be a much more difficult task to in my opinion, to write a really good and memorable song with the through composition.
Yeah. Repetition legitimizes.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have a chorus that you can,
repetition legitimizes,
like hum in your head, mm-hmm. 3 days later after hearing a song, then I think I think you're putting yourself at a great disadvantage in a genre that you're already disadvantaged in. To be able to convert listeners who aren't mm-hmm. already progressive fans.
And for anyone listening, my recommendation for a great Jack the Elbow song to start out with is Off and On. Probably my favorite Jack the Elbow song. I love it. I usually listen to it a couple times a week. It's just like straight on into my playlist. You know, it's a great song.
Thank you.
That bass line, killer. It's killer. A super memorable chorus. I love it. So if you want to get into Jack the Elbow's music before you dive headfirst into the super prog side of stuff, Off and On, fantastic song to start with, for sure.
I think Off and On would be a very good one to mm-hmm. start with. I think Phoenix is another very good track to start with. Going back to Crush, if I look at all of the songs on Crush, even though I love them all dearly, they're all my little babies. But the truth of the matter is that you do love some of your babies more than the mm-hmm. than your other babies. I would say Going Under, Off and On, Shame, Phoenix would be the four favorite babies of that album. The four horsemen of Crush.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree with that.
So on the topic of playing at venues, what has been y'all's favorite venue to play at, and where is the dream venue?
The dream venue is BJCC. as far as Birmingham is concerned. Yeah. I mean, we've played a lot of venues around the area. We love playing the Nick. We've played there many mm-hmm. times. True Story is incredible.
Especially now with the new stage.
The new stage makes a little bit different. Trim Tab has been a very incredible place to play at. And has gotten better too.
Yeah.
They have gotten way better. They have changed ownership in the past year or so, and I can't remember the guy's name. I just met him the other night. But they've got a new guy running the venue side of things, and he's gone in there.
I don't remember Andy's last name.
He's gone in there, and he has made Trim Tab into a place that feels like they want you to be there. Whereas in the past, it kind of felt like they were just shoving you in the back of the warehouse to play a venue. But even in those points in time where it wasn't spruced up and made nice, that's always been a venue that we've gotten a considerable deal of traffic at. Every show that we've played there has been well attended. There are venues that we enjoy playing at that are not the most well attended, which is unfortunate.
Avondale Apothecary. Avondale Apothecary.
We've played it a couple times.
I'm hoping that they do well post the law change in Alabama.
But they don't go out of
but
business.
Their sound is great, and their sound was set up by Aaron Green, who's a like Birmingham local. Mm-hmm. Sound mm-hmm. legend guy who's done a lot of sound professionally. Mm-hmm. So, and it sounds fantastic. As far as like the sounds of places, probably it and the Nick are mm-hmm. some of my most consistent favorites. I love the sound of the Nick. Now we've played, it's no hate against the Nick. I love some of the people there, but we've played some Nick shows to zero people. But at least it sounds incredible.
It sounds incredible.
You know, just to be honest with you,
they have a wild sound system, and they have wild sound men, professional
really
sound, men,
sound men, yeah,
who actually do this for a living.
Yeah,
Jay Taylor.
We've played mm-hmm. some other. Josh. Yeah, we've played other places. I think there's also places where, like we were talking about earlier, the more core vibes just do better. And so most of the places we've played where we were kind of just there, it felt like a little bit were places that were more core oriented. Yeah, but you know, no hate to anybody. That's just kind of the way that it is.
Yeah.
So, we're
getting close on time, so I wanted to bring this up. Tell us about Hayley Williams, Madison. I told you this would be in the podcast.
Did you tell me this was in the podcast?
And yeah, I told it? You in the Discord yesterday that I was going to ask you, and it was going to be in the episode. I did.
If you told me, then I forgot that you told me.
Yep, it's in there.
All right. Do you just want me? I let me just scroll up, and I'll just send you the long paragraph that I wrote.
So the short
answer to your question is that I'm in love with Hayley Williams, as any man would be, and I have no shame in that. Where this all came from, and maybe it's where this all came from, is that. We're flirting with the idea of doing a covers EP this summer because we're writing a very wild album that is going to take a year and a half, 2 years to be able to do. So we want to have something to put out in that gigantic time span so that we don't lose momentum. And so we're flirting with the idea of doing a covers EP this summer. And one of the songs that we're wanting to cover is Still Into You.
Which, great song.
Great song.
One of my favorite Coheed songs, honestly.
It is a Coheed song that was written
by Paramore. It is a Coheed and Cambria song. That is the most Coheed
written
guitar
and performed by Paramore.
First time I heard it was in Taco Bell, and I was like, wow, I've never heard this Coheed song. Wow, he sounds extra high this time. He's a super tenor. And then I realized it was Paramore.
And so in working on this song over the last few weeks, it has reignited the voracious flame of love that I have in my heart for this incredibly magnificent woman. So I made a few Facebook posts about how much I loved her. And then in our Discord, I can't remember how we got to talking about it, but let me go back just like a minute or so.
So if I ever get Hayley Williams on the podcast, I'm going to invite you on as a guest host.
Oh yeah, you definitely did. Yes, please do that. Please invite me. We got to meet somehow. Oh, I'm going to have Scandorfian Jadanus on the hot seat on Sunday. I'll have him describe it in detail for the podcast. You did say this. Okay.
Did.
Y'all were asking, yes, because one of the other people in the Discord said that they would love to see a PowerPoint of the plan that I have for our lives together. And so I wrote my dissertation of mine and Hayley Williams' life together.
Before you read it, can I just quickly, before I forget, just quickly like to shout out some friends that
sure.
If you're still listening to us right now.
Absolutely.
Some people that everyone should check out. And I hope I can remember everybody. Empire Springs is they're good friends. Incredible progressive metal band out of Birmingham, Alabama. They're amazing. Definitely listen to them. And I think they would be a great guest if you're ever looking for somebody to talk to, get Brett on
sure.
here. And maybe he'll talk to you. other friends, Vital. They're working on some new music that they're recording. Incredible band, kind of math rock. They're prog, but they don't like to say. That's not that they don't like to say. Ian just likes to pretend that other people are more prog than them, and then he'll bust out like the wildest thing you've ever heard in your life on stage. Incredible band, good buddies with them. We had like a long-standing joke with them that we were mortal enemies, so that was fun for like social media posts. And then they're good friends. More bands, Kinsey and Time Being. I think of those because it's two of the guys that are friends are in both of those bands. But that Kinsey is like a punk, jazzy, punkish. They're like kind of a unique flavor of punk, I would say. Worth checking out. And then Time Being is an instrumental thing that I don't think has put anything out yet, but they really, really rock. speakeasy. Shout out to Tater and Ader. Tater is Jack's true son, and we love him. And so he's got that project going on. They've got some new EP, and I cannot remember the name of their EP. Do you remember what it is?
I'm pulling it up now because it's in my saved. And it is so good.
It is very good. It is very good, and they are also very good live.
Hearsay.
They're really good. Hearsay. Yes.
Hearsay is incredible.
Really like a Honorless decal. Is pretty good. yeah, that's a band
we suck,
heard,
man.
Worth checking out for sure. And who am I missing? Are we missing anybody?
What?
Anybody that's like active
like
right now?
I feel like we are, but my mind is drawing a blank.
It's going to make me so mad if I don't.
Wiser the Morning Star.
Yeah, you're in that band.
I have to plug them because I'm in Wiser the Morning Star.
Yeah.
Jack the we got some new music coming out soon, so check that out.
Yeah. If I missed anybody else, if you're friends with us, I love you, and I hate that I did that, but yes, check out all Birmingham bands, especially ones that are not in the scene, even though they've been in the scene for years, because they need some love.
Yeah, we all need some love. What we really need is for zero people listening right now to turn into one person listening right now.
Yeah.
That's the true
exactly.
goal.
At all times, I need to see at least one.
At all times.
Yep.
Just one. Right just now. Give me just one.
This is Madison's not fantasy. This will come true. I'm manifesting it for you, Madison.
Tell us
about your future with Hayley Williams.
So we were in the Discord, and y'all were asking me about our plans together. And so this is what I spent a good 20 minutes writing for the Discord. Jack the Elbow is discovered and picked up by Paramore's management immediately. Just knowing that I'm about to read this. Jack the Elbow is discovered and picked up by Paramore's management. We get booked as their opener on a European tour in the summer of 2026. Hayley and I meet in the green room at Historic Venue in downtown Hamburg. Our eyes lock as soon as I walk into the room, and the spark that we share is immediately obvious to everyone around us, but we have to keep things professional. We have business to attend to and can't allow personal feelings to get in the way, no matter how strong they are. Over the course of 17 shows across Europe to an average crowd of 50,000 per night, our romance blossoms. And by the end of the tour, our feelings are undeniable for one another. We begin dating and tie the knot in the fall of 2027. I'm thinking an apple orchard would be a nice venue. We have two twins together, a boy and a girl, and after each releasing a joint album together that goes quadruple platinum, we both retire to the quiet countryside to focus on our family. Both of our children also grew up to be genre-defining frontmen women. Fast forward many decades, and we have stuck together through thick and thin to build a life of unwavering commitment to one another. We both pass away together peacefully in each other's arms in 2083, just minutes apart from one another, as neither one can bear the thought of living without the other, surrounded by our family. The world mourns our passing for years, and April 29th becomes National Madly Day in our honor. So if anybody has an in with a legendary vocalist Hayley Williams, I am trying to make Hey Hey my baby. So
I hope this clip like blows up on social media.
Yes, this is it, baby. Hopefully Jack the Elbow finally has our moment.
This is the moment that Jack the Elbow pops off.
The next guest I'm having on is Earshot. They are huge band from the 2000s. They had one of their songs. I hate to say they're a one-hit wonder because they're really not. They have incredible songs. But their song Wait was everywhere. So huge band. What is a question that you guys would want me to ask them?
obviously,
can we open for you? No, I'm just kidding.
That's a fantastic question. So obviously, like, the music industry has changed so radically in the last 20 years. I would be very, very interested to hear the story of how they came up and how they made it versus how the path that they think that somebody in 2025 should take.
Interesting. That'd be a really good question. Drawing the episode to a close. Thank y'all guys for being on so much. Again, this is Jack the Elbow. Where can people find and listen to your music?
We are they on can all find streaming our music platforms.
Everywhere.
Jack the Elbow. And follow us on Instagram. We're on pretty much every social media, but Instagram has always been our primary spot, at Jack the Elbow. Spotify, everywhere
that you listen to music, you can find us. Our new EP, Intensives, is dropping on June the 13th, and we're really excited about that. Like I say, we're in the middle of writing our second album right now. We have a few other little, like, small EP ideas that we're thinking about doing in that time frame that's going to take. So just give us a follow and stay tuned, and if you enjoy it, like, tell somebody about it. Help us become rich and famous.
Tell your friends about me.
Yeah, that way you can fall in love with Hayley Williams and make your plan.
Definitely tell
Hayley. If you don't tell anyone else, tell Hayley Williams about.
Yeah, even if you don't tell, just help a brother out, you know.
Thanks y'all for tuning in to the Gain Stage Podcast. I've been Dez. They have been Jack the Elbow. We'll catch you in the next episode. See ya.